Hi everyone, and welcome to the energy part of the Around the World series. My name is Jim, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by three of our CCMF colleagues. Today, we have representatives from Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and the UAE. I'd like to start out with a self-introduction. Can you tell me about yourself? Hedia, why don't you start?
Hi everyone, my name is Hedia Debel. I'm on the CCMF program at Imperial Business School. I'm extremely thrilled to be representing Saudi Arabia today on the Energy Series here on the Green Minds podcast. A little backstory about me. I was born and raised in Saudi, and I've lived in the UK for 5 years. My background is in climate and health policy within developing countries, and more specifically, climate finance and energy markets.
Thank you, Hedia. Sarah, would you like to talk about yourself?
Hello, everyone. I am Sarah from Mexico. I'm really excited to speak with you about the Mexico energy sector. I'm a chemical engineer with previous experience in the energy sector as field engineer. I used to work on energy efficiency projects. I do have experience in safety and the use of loss prevention system to reduce accidents, environmental damage, and financial losses. I joined the CCMF program to understand a little bit more about climate change issues. And I also want to develop sustainable solutions, and I am interested in renewable energy. So a little bit about me, I am part of the student content creator for Imperial College Business School. And I also joined the Latin America Business Club as marketing and communication director. In my spare time, I like to do yoga or go to the gym. And I love Mexican food. I mean, it's something that I miss from Mexico.
Yeah, don't we all love Mexican food? Yeah. Jillian, tell us about your story.
Hi, guys. I'm Jillian, and I'm originally from India. I've lived in a bunch of different countries like Thailand and Qatar, but having lived in Dubai the longest, I would definitely call the UAE home. Alongside Sarah and Hadia as well, I'm also pursuing a master's in climate change management and finance, and I joined this master's upon graduating from the University of Exeter last summer, where I studied politics, philosophy and economics. Beyond academia, I'm most notably a food content creator, and I've collaborated with businesses across Devon, London and Dubai, and I've also had the pleasure of collaborating with Imperial Business School.
Jillian, I love that you are a food content creator. Which one is your favorite food?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I get this loads, but I don't think I actually have a proper answer to it. I'd have to just choose the whole continent of Asia. I just love loads of different cuisines from there, but I don't think I could narrow it down to one, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your introductions. It's really great to have all three of you here. And now let's dive right in. So first thing that I want to talk about is the energy landscape in your respective countries. And mainly I want to hear about the current energy mix. And then I would also like to hear about your government's position towards the fossil and the renewable debate. And maybe also hear about some of the initiatives that has been planned or has been implemented. So Hedia, can we start with your Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. So I guess I'll start by saying that Saudi Arabia does acknowledge the energy transition and the limited lives and pending returns of oil and gas. The energy profile in Saudi has moved forward in implementing energy efficiency standards. The total energy supply is roughly 64% sourced from oil and 35% sourced from natural gas. 2021, about 329 terajoules of energy was produced from biofuels and 4,300 terajoules from wind, solar, and other renewable sources. So basically that denotes a 0.3% share of power generation from renewables. Although this might not seem like a lot, Saudi has experienced a growth from 65 gigawatts of solar in 2018 to 805 gigawatts in 2021. In regards to the positioning towards fossil fuels, I think I have to explain first the Saudi Vision 2030. This was developed by the Saudi government and aims to transform Saudi Arabia under three pillars. Through their pillars, they encompass facets such as the inflow of foreign direct investment, expansion of non-oil exports, and amidst other goals, diversification of non-oil revenues, and basically just an overall robust economy that embeds green supply chains. So yeah, the country's pledged to reduce emissions through the circular carbon economy approach, and it's on track. It's in line with their ambitions to achieve 50% power generation from renewables by 2030. Saudi is yet to take a firm stance on the phase out of fossil fuels, but they've strategized for ambitions for net zero by 2060 through various initiatives, such as the Saudi Green Initiative and increased investment in renewable energy projects, urban cities, and geoengineering solutions.
So now let's move on to Mexico. Sarah, can you tell us about the energy mix in Mexico, the positioning towards fossil/renewables, and the plans going forward?
Sure. For example, Mexico energy landscape relies mostly on fossil fuels, and we also have renewable energy, which has a huge potential. We have natural gas, nuclear power, biofuels, and waste and coal. In 2022, the energy mix was 44% oil and 39% natural gas. Firstly, I will address oil. As you know, Mexico has a significant production in oil and is mainly used for electricity generation, transportation, and industrial purposes. Secondly, natural gas. And in this one, the government has been making like a lot of significant investments in order to have a better infrastructure. And as a matter of renewable energy, we had wind and solar power. Actually, I had the opportunity to visit one of the wind farms that are located in Oaxaca. It's really impressive. And the region of El Istmo de Tehuantepec has a potential over 33 gigawatts, which is a lot. And I also have to say that the food in Oaxaca and Mezcal is amazing. So about the plans going forward, for this year, the target is to have 30% of Mexico electricity generation from clean energy. And at the COP27 summit in Egypt, Mexico announced the Sonora plant, which is to increase renewable energy. This plan has three pillars. The first one, large-scale cleaner energy generation. Second, the development of a strategy green infrastructure and the training of human talent. Also, at the COP28 that was held in Dubai, the government provided the status of the project, and Mexico also joined the Global Renewables and Energy Efficiency Pledge, which aims to triple the world's grid energy capacity to at least 11,000 gigawatts by 2030. However, in Mexico, we face the challenge of climate policies, regulatory framework, and a huge investment in renewable energy and clean technologies.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Sounds like Oaxaca is a place where there's a lot of wind farms. May I ask if it's onshore or onshore wind?
Yeah, there are onshore wind farms.
Thank you, Sarah, for giving us an overview of Mexico. Now let's move on to the UAE. Jillian, can you tell us about the UAE?
Sure. When the UAE comes to mind, the association with oil and gas is inevitable, given that they are among the largest OPEC producers. Over the last 52 years, these sources have undeniably shaped the nation. However, there is growing recognition that economic progress can be made while minimizing environmental impact. According to the most recent data available on the International Energy Agency, it indicates that the current energy mix in the UAE, ranked from highest to lowest, includes natural gas, oil, nuclear, coal, and as of 2021, only 4.2% of power generated was from renewable sources. However, there are efforts underway to transition sustainably through policy and regulation, technological innovation and technical tools, and the goal really is to achieve net zero by 2050. This ambitious agenda is driving huge transformation within the UAE's energy sector, and it aims to diversify its energy portfolio. So they've outlined a strategy called the Energy Strategy for 2050, and it would require an investment of 600 billion AED, and outlines the following mix to meet economic and environmental goals. And that would be 44% clean energy, predominantly solar, 38% gas, 12% clean coal, 6% nuclear. And the Emirates aims to facilitate a smooth transition from traditional to alternative sources of energy, notably the Al Dhafra solar PV plant, which stands out as the world's largest single-site solar power plant, boasting nearly 4 million solar panels, and it targets a displacement of 2.4 million tons of carbon emissions. And there are also plans to build a large concentrated solar power project with the promise to deliver affordable power and also reduce carbon emissions. And in addition to this, the UAE also aims to leverage nuclear, wind, and waste to energy to meet its sustainability targets.
Hey, thank you, Jillian, for providing the overview. It sounds like the UAE's clean energy mix-up is mainly consisted of solar, gas, clean coal, and nuclear. Do you see a potential for wind to be part of that mix-up, or is wind just not a really available resource in the UAE?
Wind is an available resource, and they are looking to leverage it, but I think that just due to the vast, shall we say, availability of solar, that would be their main avenue, but there are wind projects being conducted within the UAE.
Sounds good, thank you. So now that we understand these countries better, now I want to dive deep into each country, and I want to mainly figure out what drives transition in these countries. Let me provide an example. I'm from Taiwan, and what drives the energy transition in Taiwan is not a concern of climate change, it's mainly a concern of geopolitical issues. And as you know, the main thing is about national security. Last year, China had an embargo on Taiwanese waters, and then we realized that the natural gas and the coal that we have can't last us for another month. And so that's when the Taiwanese government really realized the importance of having locally sourced energy. And since Taiwan is such a small island country, we only really have renewables to supply that locally sourced energy. And so that's the main thing that's pushing for Taiwan's energy transition. What about Saudi Arabia? Hadia, can you tell us what's pushing for renewables in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, so I would say that a large part of what drives the transition in Saudi is the Vision 2030, as I mentioned. Mainly also the country's initiative is to diversify its energy mix and increase renewables, and that kind of incentive lies in their funding for long-term infrastructures and industrial projects. The government has invested significantly in large-scale projects for solar manufacturing. The Ministry of Investment has partnered with Glasspoint to build a solar facility that I believe at full capacity should produce 5,000 tons of solar steam and reduce CO2 by 200,000 tons annually. So the major initiatives are government-led by entities such as the Ministry of Energy with subsidiaries such as the National Renewable Energy Program, the Public Investment Fund with operations such as the Voluntary Carbon Market, and many, many more. So mainly what drives the transition is that Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund is funding 13 renewable energy projects with a collective capacity of 11.3 gigawatts. And these projects, once operational, are set to reduce around 20 million tons of CO2 per year. Basically the main point here is that the majority of circular carbon economy approaches are backed by sovereign wealth funds, and they're accredited by the Green Finance Framework as part of the government's vision for 2030. This framework is controlled by the Public Investment Fund, and it's the basis for issuing green bonds, loans, and other financing instruments. Essentially managed by sovereign funds, these projects are cleared by the framework, and they're used for the development of taxonomies for sustainable activities. And they also exclude investments in fossil fuel distribution assets, landfill operation waste assets, and basically just any fossil fuel related activities and underlying investments in R&D.
It sounds to me that the major force pushing for renewable energy in Saudi Arabia is from the public sector. Mm-hmm. Do you also see any initiatives from the private sector?
There is a vast like range of investments from the private sector. However, the more large scale projects are from the public sector, like the National Development Authority has financed a 2.6 gigawatt solar plant. So the more large scale initiatives that actually result in a significant reduction in carbon emissions are for the most part funded by the public sector. The private sector does have a major involvement in the green transition. So Saudi Aramco and SABIC has actually announced a 1.3 trillion private sector investment in green projects for the most part, or any projects that are in alignment with Vision 2030 and push for economic diversification. So part of that also includes the push for renewables, geoengineering, and nature-based solutions.
Hey, thank you for providing the perspective. Now moving on to Mexico. Sarah, can you tell us about what's going on in Mexico?
Yeah, of course. As you know, we have certain dependence on fossil fuels. So that's the reason that diversifying the energy mix will also enhance energy security for the whole country. And also, like many other countries, Mexico faces environmental challenges such as air pollution and climate change. So really shifting to renewables helps to mitigate these issues. And we also have commitments in Mexico under, you know, the Paris Agreement, and also set national determination contributions. So that's another key point that helped the government shift to transition towards cleaner energy sources. And as we all know, we are also need like a huge investment in renewable energy infrastructure in order to improve the energy access. So in this case, by using renewable energy technologies as solar panels and more efficient in microgrids, we can provide energy to remote areas where grid connectivity might be limited. So in general, I consider that in Mexico, it's a huge necessity to increase renewables energy. And these key drivers will be environmental, economic, social, and also geopolitical considerations that will be involved in the energy transition.
Thank you, Sarah, for providing the perspective. I have one question. So when I was looking at some of the microgrids that's being implemented in Malaysia, something that I guess popped up is that these microgrids are mainly reliant on fossil fuel generators. So these are mainly diesel generators. Do you see the same situation in Mexico, or are these microgrids in Mexico being supplied by clean energy?
Yes, there is an increasing trend towards incorporating clean energy sources into microgrid systems in Mexico. Overall, I will say, while fossil fuel-based microgrids have been prevalent in Mexico, there is a growing transition towards clean energy microgrids, reflecting global trends towards decarbonization and renewable energy adoption.
And now moving on to the UAE. Obviously, the UAE hosted COP28, and I feel like that a big showcase of interest by the public sector. Julian, can you provide more context?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously the UAE hosted COP28, and this is just goes to show that the country is ready and willing to move towards more cleaner and sustainable sources of energy. And it showcases as well that their transition is primarily driven by their aims to reduce their reliance on oil export revenues and ultimately safeguard its economy against severe shocks of climate change. There are also growing threats such as pollution and water scarcity due to the UAE's arid semi-desert environment, and the country feels that a sustainable transition is needed now more than ever. The UAE transition is also fueled by increasing energy demand. The nation has high and unsustainable energy intensity per capita, and this obviously poses significant challenges. Air conditioning alone contributes to about 70% of peak electrical loads, with this figure expected to increase as the impacts of climate change worsen. So essentially what the country has identified is that energy efficiency poses a significant challenge in the UAE due to population growth, economic activity, and high consumption rates, which have provoked the need for smart cities, building efficiency, and water desalinization. Ultimately, there is an overarching sustainable strategy that is needed for each sector and their respective value chain, which capitalize on technology to boost efficiency within the economy. The UAE, I believe, would also benefit from regulation and education that addresses this high demand of energy within the country, as well as information campaigns to engage stakeholders to achieve this sustainable development and growth.
Thank you, Julia, for providing perspective. There's one thing that piqued my interest. You mentioned that air conditioning takes up 70% of the peak load. And I'm imagining with the abundance of solar in the UAE, is there any intermittent issue that just kind of comes up, or is there like good synergy between solar and, you know, air conditioning?
I think that solar definitely will be a large part of the solution to this problem. While I'm not the most knowledgeable on the intricacies of the solar projects in the UAE, I do believe that they have considered storage potential within their projects to support these peak loads. So I do think that demand in terms of AC during temperatures when it's quite hot poses quite a challenge, but the potential to store is definitely huge and will help to harness the solar power within this problem.
So now that we've talked about sort of the support for renewable energy, it's also important to consider some of the limitations, some of the challenges, and some of the considerations when implementing the energy transition. So first, I'd like to start off with some of the challenges or considerations seen in Saudi Arabia. Bedia, can you provide some context on this?
Saudi's goals are definitely ambitious in regards to their goals to meet 50% renewable energy by 2030. Needless to say, the energy transition globally carries significant risk for investors and just overall uncertainty. However, Saudi has various frameworks in line to achieve a zero carbon electricity system. I know that we hear a lot about challenges with returns on investments, and that's what's slowing the energy transition. But Saudi Arabia has shown that they're very strategic in their push for a smooth transition, and their overall efforts that are put in place are very promising. Even when considering Saudi's role in the international oil market and their reliance on fossil fuels, I mean, we've seen other OPEC countries make significant progress, so I have full faith that Saudi's shift to clean energy and overall decarbonization is a transition that we will see sooner rather than later.
Earlier, we talked about some of the challenges that may come up when implementing microgrids in Mexico. Can you also tell us about some of the other challenges faced by Mexico in general?
So I would also would like to mention, as Hadia mentioned about Saudi, is this important about diversifying the energy mix? I would say it's also happening in Mexico because we have oil will be like the first source of energy. So it's really important diversifying the energy mix. And for example, for Mexico, the challenges, as we discussed, the microgrids, and I think it's about the infrastructure investment. So, you know, as transitioning to renewable energy requires significant investment in infrastructure, which includes building new power plants, upgrading transmission and the distribution networks, and also integrating intermittent renewable sources into the grid. So that requires a huge investment in infrastructure. And also, like the secondly, I will mention about policy and regulatory framework. I think it's something really important, developing effective policies and regulations that promote renewable energy deployment, and also ensuring grid stability, energy security for the country, and a fair market competition will be crucial. As we know, the development of renewable energy projects can also face opposition from local communities because it involves the land use and also has an environmental and social impact. So we want to make sure that we ensure equitable access to energy and also think about this energy transition that should prioritize expanding energy access to communities that might be allocated in some areas where they don't have all the services. So now I would like to discuss about the forces for the transition in energy. I think increasing renewable energy deployment is crucial for mitigating climate change and also by reducing greenhouse emissions and transition away from fossil fuels. That is a huge challenge. Also about the social impact, I think increasing renewable energies can help to develop jobs, also stimulate economic growth and attract investment to clean energy industries, and also will contribute to have a sustainable development in this that we have discussed about economic diversification. And for example, related to forces against the transition, definitely will be the infrastructure challenge. Also, we have fossil fuel interest, political opposition, and economic concerns. So I think that will be most of the forces against the transition. But overall, I think we are in the right way and we are in the right path to shift energy transition towards renewables.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. I just have one quick question. You mentioned that the free market access is part of the challenge. And with the US subsidizing their renewable energy industry with the IRA so much, do you see that as a challenge to Mexico, or does Mexico actually benefit from that?
That's a really good question. So I will explain challenges and benefits from my perspective. For example, US renewable energy subsidies will increase production and lower the prices for renewable technologies. Therefore, Mexican renewable energy projects will have more competition, especially if they rely on technical components from US. Also, it will be more challenging for Mexico to compete on the global energy market, especially if Mexico does not provide similar subsidies. Also, US subsidies attract significant investment, development, and manufacturing, so it could be a potential reduction in Mexico renewable investment, potentially slowing down its growth and innovation. So about the benefits, US subsidies will lead to advancement in renewable energy technology and practices that Mexico could benefit from through collaborations, partnerships, and that will help to accelerate Mexico renewable development, expanding market opportunities, and reducing costs for Mexican renewable energy projects. So that could be a win-win.
Thank you so much for your answer on Mexico's situation. Now, finally, we'd like to move on to the UAE. So for the UAE, I am aware that rising sea level is a challenge for the UAE, and that sort of prompted the need for energy transition there. But what are the major challenges in consideration in implementing this transition, in your opinion, Jillian?
Sure. So as you rightly identified, there are growing concerns as to how rising carbon emissions will impact weather. And actually, back in 2010, the UAE commissioned a study to assess their vulnerability. And this was conducted by the Stockholm Environment Institute, which is affiliated with Tufts University in Massachusetts. And it projected that the UAE could lose up to 6% of its inhabited and developed coastline by the end of the century due to rising sea levels. So the UAE has 1,300 kilometers of coastline, and approximately 85 to 90% of its infrastructure is located within close proximity of the sea level. So as ocean warms and rising sea surface temperature will lead to thermal expansion, coastal communities may start to experience more frequent and intense storms and weather events. The likelihood of encountering such challenges will obviously only further compound with global commitment and mobilization, or lack thereof. However, despite all of these facts and all of the situation at hand, I guess, the impacts of climate change on sea level, coastal population and infrastructure is yet to be adequately accounted for within the UAE. So I think this is something that they definitely need to be focusing on, given the urgency of the situation, but as of right now, there isn't a concrete answer on that one.
Okay, thank you so much for providing these perspectives. So before we wrap up, Hadia has something to tell us. Hadia, why don't you start?
I also wanted to take a moment to promote the Women in Sustainable Education Program, also known as WISE. Our ambassadors and our founder are fellow CCMFers. I'm also an ambassador on WISE, and the goal is to provide a platform for women and children to learn more about climate change and the impacts that it might have on their respective fields. So we're hosting several workshops for children, as well as a panel for women in sustainability in all of its aspects over the next few months. So stay tuned for that and feel free to reach out if you would be interested in being a part of WISE.
Jillian also has something from the PII. Jillian, would you like to talk about it?
Absolutely. So PII is Positive Investment Imperial, and we're dedicated to raising awareness of sustainable and responsible investment amongst students in the business school and the wider Imperial community. And we're going to be hosting a symposium on the 22nd of May, featuring a range of panel discussions from fantastic speakers across the sustainable finance sector and other industries. So as soon as we release tickets, we'll pop a link in the show notes, and hopefully you can all attend.
So be sure to check out the show notes. There'll be a lot of events and information available there. So this concludes our episode for Around the World series. And thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you next time.